Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help members of the military community succeed in their civilian career. Today's episode number 342, Army to Google Software Engineer with Joe Schaefer.
And after about 5.5 years, I was teaching troop leading procedures at Iboluc. And a recruiter from Google and a recruiter for high frequency trading companies had found my GitHub profile. So the Google recruiter, I told him to wait because I didn't think that there was any way I would pass. But for the high frequency trading recruiter, I bought Cracking the Coding interview, studied up for several months. I went to 4 interviews, only got 1 job offer, but that was the push I needed to pursue software development full time.
Joe's story is a great example of a military veteran who makes a big career change after the military. He majored in computer science at West Point, but never had any intention of going into software engineering. However, he loved to program, and so he kept on doing it on the side while in the military. That hobby landed him a job at Google and a completely different life and career path. In this interview, we talk about software engineering, what it's like, how to succeed in this role, what career progression looks like, and the difference between a large company like Google and a small startup like his current employer, Heap. Regardless of whether or not you're interested in software engineering, Joe's story shares great advice on how to make a transition to a wildly different career path in the military. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find show notes with links to everything we discuss, as well as a text transcript thanks to Kathleen Dillon. You'll also find signups for events. We're doing about 4 a month right now. You'll find on-demand webinars. Those are previous recordings of webinars that we've done, all available for free, in addition to 342 episodes just like this one. Special thanks to Stephen Halper, who shared this feedback with Beyond the Uniform. He said, I recently listened to Beyond the Uniform number 328 with Micah Fink and then watched his TEDx talk, which was really interesting. In my opinion, one of the greatest aspects of Beyond the Uniform is the diversity of the people you interview. I can't tell you how many philosophies and perspectives I've discovered, but I can tell you that I listen to them with my sales team on a weekly basis. Stephen, thank you so much for that feedback. It means a lot. Thanks to all of you who've reached out, sharing similar stories, and even more so for sharing them on our iTunes reviews page. We really appreciate them. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Joe. Well, joining me today in San Francisco, California, my guest is Joe Schaefer. Joe, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Special thanks to Jimmy Sopko from episode 2, I think, who made the introduction. I want to give listeners a quick background on Joe. He is a software engineer at Heap, which is a technology that allows organizations of all sizes to remove technical bottlenecks and gain a single comprehensive view of their customer. He started out at West Point, where he studied computer science, after which he served in the Army for 5 years. After his military service, he worked at Google as a software engineer for nearly 3 years. And for listeners, you know, I was excited that I got to connect with Joe because it's a pretty... I haven't seen this story before, and from what I know, it seems like a pretty big shift of going from the Army and then not only going into tech, but going into tech on the front lines as a software engineer. And so excited to have Joe share his story. And maybe Joe, to start things out, could you share a little bit with listeners about what your transition was like from the Army?
Sure. So it was a part luck and part preparation. So my undergrad was computer science, and then I joined the Army as infantry, so I didn't use it at all, but on the side, I would follow whatever the programming subreddit thought was cool, or whatever Hacker News thought was the language of that week, so explored a lot of languages and technologies that way, and after about 5.5 years, I was teaching troop leading procedures at Iboluc, and a recruiter from Google and a recruiter for high frequency trading companies had found my GitHub profile. So the Google recruiter, I told him to wait because I didn't think that there was any way I would pass. But for the high frequency trading recruiter, I bought Cracking the Coding Interview, studied up for several months. I went to four interviews, only got one job offer, but that was the push I needed to pursue software development full time. So after that, I dropped my resignation packet for the Army. The Google recruiter reached out again and was like, ah, sure, why not? I have job offers, so it can't be that bad. So did the on-site, did well enough, and came out with the Google offer and took that.
That must have felt amazing. Did you always know that you wanted to, I mean, you did undergrad in computer science. Was it your plan that you would eventually do that?
Not really. So I was teaching in Iboic. I was pretty happy. It was a cool place to be. And I was transitioning to the Army's newly created cyber branch. So that was sort of my game plan. So the recruiters reaching out is kind of what sparked my interest, but it hadn't crossed my mind before then.
What was it? What is it about software engineering that you like, that attracted you to that space?
Sure. So I got into it in high school. And there was a book called The Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programs, which is a classic book. I think MIT used it for a long time as our intro CS book. But I found I could spend hours on those problems, which I can't say about a whole lot of things. So I really like that aspect of being able to deeply engage in a technical problem.
That's great. And for listeners, whether or not you're interested in software engineering or something completely different, I love, Joe, that you're using that state of flow. I've heard it referred to, where you identified an activity where time just kind of passed by, which can often be a good thread to pull on to figure out a career option, unless it's like watching Netflix. No one really gets paid to do that. But you found something productive that you were doing that time did not seem to matter. I'm just curious, just to not to jump ahead too far, but now that you've been doing this for, you know, 5 years, four or five years, is that still true? Like when you're programming, when you're doing this, does time just kind of fly by?
It's still true. So on Monday, I'm working on creating a new blog website and creating it all myself from scratch, essentially. And I was up till 2, I think, working on that. So yeah, it still happens.
So you're playing into the Silicon Valley stereotype of staying up late and maybe sleeping in a little bit later too.
Yeah, it's a bad habit, but it's so fun to work on those problems.
What was, you described a little bit about it, but I'm just wanting to paint the picture for people who might want to go down this path. Could you share a little bit more about the application process, the interview process? It doesn't necessarily need to be for Google specifically, but just some lessons that you learned along the way and in the different places you applied.
Yeah. So I'll start with Google, since that one's probably the most standardized. The book I referenced earlier, Cracking the Coding Interview, gives us like an exhaustive treatment on exactly how they interview. Google, the way they set up are similar to most tech companies, is they'll do an initial recruiter call to gauge interest, see if you're remotely qualified for the position. Then they'll do a phone screen with an engineer, which is usually an easy to medium-ish problem, and you have like a 45-minute phone call to do that. If you pass that, they fly you into Mountain View, California to do the on-site interview, which consists of 5 45-minute technical questions. So throughout my interview, all I was asked was technical questions. There was no digging into my resume or any behavioral questions. And that's pretty standard for most tech companies.
And I imagine for some listeners, that might be an indicator that this career path would be appealing. It's actually interesting to me because it's almost similar to sales. I think sales, there's more personality stuff, but it seems like it's performance. It's not personality. It's not resumes or degrees. At the end of the day, it's like, can this person solve these problems? And if so, great. And I love that aspect of the field that you've chosen. It seems like, you know, meritocracy is the word that comes to mind. It might not be the right word, but that sense that it's all performance driven, and it doesn't have to do with politics or references or things like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I will say the one bit of personality they check for is don't be a jerk, which I feel like most people have mastered that. So it's low bar, but there is a bar there.
That's awesome. And apart from cracking the coding interview, what else helped you get ready for the application process? You mentioned something listeners might not be familiar with, GitHub. What other things were you doing to, build the muscles and get ready for ultimately the work that you're doing now?
Yes, I kind of got lucky in that I was just really into it. So I was doing preparation without knowing I was doing preparation. So playing with new programming languages, like doing deep dives on different technologies. So I looked into, there's a technology called Git, which allows you to do version control. So diving into how that works fundamentally. But typically the path is either computer science degree, or if for folks like without too much time or where that time opportunity cost is too high, boot camps are a good option, but I know less about that path. And then for actual interview prep, there's a site called LeetCode. Their business model is essentially selling interview questions for big tech companies. So if you're looking at joining a big tech company, that's not a bad option.
Awesome. When you were at Google for, three years or so, could you take us through what your day-to-day life looked like? It needs to be a representative day, but especially if you're open to kind of time stamping it, I think it helps people get a sense of like what an actual day might look like.
Sure. So I usually roll into work about 10:30 or so. Then from there, I'd spend about an hour working on a task would be assigned weekly using a process called sprint planning. Then we would do our stand up around 11:30, like a daily check-in, see where everyone's at, if anyone is blocked. Go to lunch. So the Google campus has something ridiculous like 20 cafes to choose from. And then in the afternoon, usually there'd be like one or two meetings sprinkled throughout the afternoon, but the rest of the time was heads down, coding away at a problem. And then I'd work until 6:30 or so.
And would you usually have to work on weekends, or what was like the work-life balance like?
No, so I never had pressure from Google to work like overtime type hours. I did it to myself sometimes because I really wanted to get something done. I don't recommend this practice, but I am guilty of doing it.
That's awesome. And we'll get into your role at Heap in a second, but how does that compare to your life now? Is it pretty similar in terms of kind of hours and what you do throughout the day?
You're asking what my like schedule at Heap is like?
Exactly. Yeah. What the day-to-day life is like.
Yeah. Very similar. Get to work around the same time and similar type of meeting breakdown versus coding time.
What about maybe could you give a little bit of information for it? So I'm sure every listener is familiar with Google. What would you want listeners to know about Heap before we talk a little bit more about transition there and things like that?
Yeah. So Heap is a data analytics company, similar to, you might've heard, Google Analytics. The main differentiating factor and what drew me to it was, their technology called retroactive analytics, which means Heap will capture all your events from the beginning and allow you to query any aspect of those events. So an event is like going to Amazon, clicking the checkout cart button, and then clicking pay. So you have two events there, clicking the go to cart and clicking the pay button. Mm-hmm. So with most analytics, you have to define what you want to track ahead of time. Where Heap, we track everything. And that's so that's awesome. A very interesting data engineering problem, like how to do that efficiently. So that's that was my main draw.
How did the transition come about from Google to Heap?
So I don't think people leave companies so much as they leave managers. So I was there for about 3 years. Google's very comfortable. I had a great time there. But it was sort of just itching to do something. Like I wanted to go faster and I wanted to be closer to the business side of the house. At Google, I was on an internal platform team, so it's very insulated from like anything that actually made money. So Heap, the CTO sent me a LinkedIn in last June. And then I followed up with them and they ticked all the boxes I was looking for. They're about 120 people. They have like a real business problem they're solving, and they have a really interesting data problem they're solving.
And that was one of the things that occurred to me as you were talking is understanding that the differences or what has been different for your life going from a really big and well-known company and then going into, you said like about 120 person company, the startup that's growing, that's a brand new idea. How has that impacted your life or what differences have you noticed?
So to be honest, I wanted to move into San Francisco to meet and find a girlfriend, which has been successful. So that's been great.
Congrats. Yeah.
So that was a priority. And then, so I was in Mountain View because I value a short commute and Google is in Mountain View. So I had a nice like 20-minute bike ride. But Mountain View is a sleepy town. Very quiet, very peaceful, but just a little bit too slow for what I was looking for. And so getting into San Francisco is nice. Was that what you were asking?
That's great. So it sounds like the location is definitely different. Anything else feel different going from a large company to a smaller company?
Yes. So like one thing you can generally say about startups is everything is on fire all the time. Like mature companies have slowly built infrastructure to make these fires like either less dramatic or to put them out automatically. Whereas at the startup, you're building that infrastructure. So startups are a fantastic place to accelerate your learning and growth at the cost of everything is much more uncertain. So that's what I was looking for and that's what I found.
That's awesome. If you were advising someone who's currently in the military, they want to go become a software engineer, what advice would you have for them about choosing to go to a big company first versus just diving straight into a smaller startup like you're at now?
Yeah, so I'd say for tech, the important piece is getting a foothold. That's typically the hardest part. Just because it's hard to know exactly what companies are looking for, and oftentimes your experience in the military won't support the tech career directly, and companies don't know how to value the attributes the military has given you. So if I were applying today, I would do targeted interview prep for a couple big companies, but I would take pretty much every interview to try to land one, because if you do land an offer, you become much more attractive to other companies. Mm-hmm. Like if you're interviewing at Google and you have an offer from Apple, all of a sudden you become much more valuable. Because someone else wants you. So that would be kind of my high level advice.
One thing I didn't ask about when you were initially applying, how did you even know the companies to apply to? Were these companies that were coming to you or using a recruiter? Were they finding you on GitHub as well? Or were they names that you had heard about that you applied on their website? How did those different interviews come about?
Yeah. So, like I said, I didn't know I was going to end up in software development. So a recruiter, really a technical sourcer, found my GitHub profile and then sent the email to me. And so that was sort of how I started the application process. I didn't actively go out and submit applications.
That's so awesome. That's so refreshing to hear. It's so rare that I hear that type of story, but it seems like, you know, definitely correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like you were doing something you enjoyed. You were, you know, working actively almost like as a hobby, and that hobby through GitHub was discovered, and that led to a recruiter reaching out and Google reaching out, but it was really born out of something you were doing for your own enjoyment, which is so awesome.
Yeah, I feel really lucky that it all worked out. I had no idea, and everything just kind of clicked into place.
What advice do you have if you were talking to someone who's still in the military, maybe they've been out for a couple of years, and they said, man, I want to go down this career path. You mentioned a couple of resources that I'll put in the show notes at beyonduniform.org, like Lead Code and Cracking the Coding Interview. What other advice would you have for them about how to approach this sort of career?
Sure. The advice would vary based on where you're at. So if you're just going into college, getting a computer science undergrad is your best bet, because that gives you a broad array of skills. Tech interview will typically pick from different parts of that. So they might do algorithms or data structures. And that stuff is harder to compress into a bootcamp style education. But if you are further along, like you did your time in the Army, and you already have a degree, and the opportunity cost is too high to spend like another 2 to 3 years getting an undergrad, boot camps can be viable. I would be wary because it feels like it's sort of a gold rush, and there's a lot of boot camps preying on people. So I would vet those carefully. And then I would treat the interview I would use mission analysis and the troop leading procedures, since that's what I know, but like figure out what they're going to ask, like how to best prepare for their specific type of interview questions, and recognize that it's a game. It's sort of a silly game, because like I'm not going to code on a whiteboard in my real job, but that's besides the point, right? Your goal is to get an offer. So like if you have to write code on an interview or a whiteboard to do that, like that's what you're going to do.
That's great. Yeah, I think that's probably applicable to so many different career paths, is like recognizing the artificial nature of it and the silliness of it, and just realize like it is a game, and like, okay, go to win it, do what you have to do to win it, even if it's not a perfect representation of what you're doing, or there's a certain absurdity of of the way that it's structured.
Yeah, it's easy to get wrapped around the axle and get upset at the process, but like I've been guilty of that, but ultimately it's not helpful to your own cause.
Mm. One question that occurs to me, because at least from my perspective, it seems like the transition from Army or the military to software engineering seems like a pretty big one, is, are there any traits that you feel like you really developed at West Point and in the Army that have helped you in this career path?
Yeah, for sure. The one that sticks out is probably determination or grit. Like, it turns out a lot of people's threshold for like ongoing pain is quite low. So it's useful at times to like be able to, like, oh, this isn't so bad, I've done worse, and just grind through it. So that's been quite helpful. And then in a general sense, so I was on the more introverted side in the Army, right? Because infantry is very type A, like loud, aggressive people. Like, and I can do well in that world. But then I switched to software engineering, where it's not quite the same. So now I'm more of an extroverted guy. So that's been kind of an interesting shift in social dynamics.
That's awesome. What about for listeners who may not be familiar with maybe the popular reputation of Silicon Valley tech startups, especially for those who are on active duty, who are very used to the military, could you talk a little bit about perks that you enjoyed either at Google or Heap? Like one that comes to mind is the free food on campus, just any sort of perks that might almost seem like a foreign concept to someone who's on a ship right now or who's stationed overseas.
So, Google's perks are amazing. They optimize for engineer productivity, and it shows across the company. At every level, they will spend more money to get the best quality stuff. So their buildings are top quality. They will vet all their vendors to make sure they're not leaking any sort of chemicals that might reduce intellectual capacity. There's nice light everywhere. And then the perks everyone knows about, like free food is huge. There's gyms on campus. I lived in Mountain View. I lived two blocks away from one of their smaller buildings that had a 25-yard pool outside. So I had a free swimming pool I could go work out at. Their 401k match is incredible. They'll match 100% up to 3,000 and then 50% up to 19,000, I think. There's all sorts of random perks. There's rental cars on site if you need to run errands that are free. Education run by other Googlers, which is free, covering a broad range of topics. Yeah, there's a lot of perks at Google.
You're making me jealous here. It doesn't have to be just for Google, but for this career path, what were some of the harder transition points of going from active duty military and then into this environment? Were there things that were speed bumps or things that felt like a cultural shift or work style shift that you had to adapt to?
Yeah, there were definitely speed bumps along the way. The biggest one for me was getting used to the fact that your manager isn't this authoritarian figure like your battalion commander might be in the Army as a lieutenant or junior captain. So that took me probably a year to figure out. My manager is he's trying to help me out, and it's a much more cordial relationship usually than in the military. And then communication styles are very different. Everything is a bit toned down. Giving direct, concrete feedback on why a person did terribly on something usually isn't the best approach to things. And then the style of work changed. When I'm in the Army, I was essentially a manager, and then I switched to being an individual contributor, which is refreshing because you don't have to worry about what your 40 Joes are doing. But you do miss certain parts of that. I would say those are probably the major speed bumps I hit.
Do you know if you want to get back into that management aspect, if eventually you want to be managing other engineers?
I think I do. So the path there looks like going up to an engineering manager. I really wanted to prove to myself that I could hack it as a frontline software engineer. So I felt like I ticked that box. So I think, that's definitely on my timeline, is to look at switching over to the management track.
And this may be new terminology for some listeners, but could you also walk us through if you stay in your sort of role, what the career progression looks like? You mentioned one acronym earlier, CTO, or for listeners, Chief Technology Officer, which might be at the pinnacle of that. And you just mentioned engineering manager. Could you walk us through just in general what that progression looks like?
Sure. So there's generally two progressions as a software engineer. You can stay an individual contributor, which is not dissimilar to when the Army had specialist 1 through specialist 9, where you just do one specific type of job. So you won't manage people, you'll just code. So that's pretty easy to ride that track up for about 10 years, and then it gets much harder because to get promoted, you have to show your impact is equivalent to a manager of like a similar rank. So generally people end up switching. And then the management track looks like you'll be an individual contributor for 3 to 6, 7 years. Then you'll switch to an engineering manager. You'll start with a small team, probably 3-4 people. And then the teams will slowly grow. And the titles change a little bit. You might become a director and then a vice president and then a CTO. But generally, you're managing engineers.
That's awesome. And you mentioned a couple books already. I'm wondering what resources you would recommend to listeners. And one that I didn't write down, you mentioned at the start, Reddit, some subreddit, but anything that listeners who are stationed overseas or on a ship, they might be able to go to, I don't know, learn a little bit more or start to get into this.
Yeah. So if you're doing interview prep, cracking coding interviews worth its weight in gold, Lead Code, a site that essentially sells common interview problems to big tech companies. So the Reddit, the subreddit I was talking about was the programming subreddit. I feel like it's declined in quality since I used it like 10 years ago, but it's still a valuable resource. I spend far too much time on Hacker News, which is a good way to gauge kind of what the Silicon Valley bubble is feeling. But you should recognize that it's a bubble and it is echo chambery in there. Local meetups are good, but that's probably difficult if you're deployed. And then, so for me, it was mostly, I would use Reddit and Hacker News as jumping off points to explore technology. So yeah, I can recommend that path for sure.
That's great. And I just admire how you self-taught a lot on this and found these communities and found ways to sharpen your skills. Cause it is, I don't want to underscore for listeners how big of a transition this seems going from Army and then a couple months later starting at Google. I think it's a pretty inspiring jump leap to make. And I hope listeners either realize this is a compelling career opportunity, or maybe it just illustrates that you can come from the military and do anything. But just like Joe has done, you know, he did his work. He was sharpening his skills and getting ready for that. Even though he didn't know he was getting ready for this transition, and that work behind the scenes paid off for him.
Yeah, exactly. Well said.
Well, I always like to leave the last question open-ended, and you can take this in one of two ways. Either what do we not cover that you really think listeners should know, or what's some final words of wisdom that you'd like to leave them with before you wrap up?
Sure. I think I'll choose the second option, the final words of wisdom. I found I've consistently underplayed the value of relationships. And it's just now becoming clear to me that like building your network over time is a very valuable endeavor and opens so many doors, especially using the military network. So like I was introduced to you through Jimmy, right? Who I think was your classmate. Is that right?
I'm trying to now remember. I think a classmate of mine introduced me to him. So he's okay. A classmate of a friend of a friend of a friend now. Yeah.
Yeah. But just those like second order connections you get through your network are incredibly valuable. So I would encourage building that network over time and leveraging it.
And I'll just piggyback on something you said earlier too, about the, you know, going from the military to that larger company. I'm imagining for you, one of the benefits of working at a place like Google is you meet people, you kind of instantly expand your network. And not only do you have the brand recognition of this company on your resume, but you're meeting a lot of people. And those are people that, you know, they're friends, but they're also potentially introductions, or they might know of people. And not that that's why you do it, but I think it's a big perk of working at a company that's well established and has really high quality people, because you're filling your network with really great people.
Yeah. I joined a Scotch club at Google, and like, that's a great network of solid friends that like, yeah, like just in general, you're correct. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, Joe, thank you for your time today, and thank you for sharing your story with Beyond the Uniform.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Beyond the Uniform is written and produced by me, Justin Siri, with help from our Chief of Staff, Steve Bain, and our editor, Kathleen Dillon. We are an all-volunteer organization and would greatly appreciate your help in any of the following ways. First, spread the word. Beyond the Uniform has over 330 podcast episodes and 15 on-demand webinars, all offered for free. Help us spread the word on social media, at military bases, or whatever gets this resource in front of more men and women who need it. Positive reviews on iTunes go a long way towards this as well. Second, sponsorship. Beyond the Uniform relies on sponsorship to keep us going. There is so much more we'd like to do, but we don't have nearly the resources to do so. If you know of a company that would like to advertise in any way with Beyond the Uniform, please send them to beyondtheuniform.org. Third, donations. If you're in a financial position to donate, you can find more information on the support section of beyondtheuniform.org. At our website, beyondtheuniform.org, you'll also find 330-plus episodes categorized by industry, functional role, and more. You'll find a link for live events, typically 4 per month. You'll also find both free and for-purchase books that take a deeper dive on topics related to career growth. Thank you for your support as we aim to help members of the military and their families thrive in their post-military career and life.